So I came across the the FWBO as it was then, Shearer, as we know it is now, in 1990, and I was 24. That was in London, at the London Buddhist Centre, or around the London Buddhist Centre, and it was really my first substantial contact with Buddhism. I'd read a little bit about Buddhism, but nothing particularly kind of substantive at all. And in 1991, so the year after that, my mother developed cancer of the colon. And she was, for a period, she was very ill. And during that time, I developed a desire, an urge, a need to understand more about death, about life and death. When I'd been a child, my grandmother had died, but in a way I'd been too young to consciously or semi-consciously want to engage with that process of life and death. But in my mid-20s, I did want to do that. So I started to, having just come across Buddhism, I started to explore what Buddhism had got to say, or at least some things that Buddhism had got to say about death. And I read various things. The main thing that comes to mind now is reading the Tibetan Book of the Dead, so particularly the Evans Wentz translation of what's known as the Tibetan Book of the Dead. A lot of what was said kind of went over my head or under my head or something. It didn't quite kind of register with me. It was a lot of symbolism which I'd not come across before. I didn't really know what to make of it. But towards the end of the text, there's something called the root verses of the six bardos. And I'd not been going to the Buddhist Center very much up to that point. I'd not really been interested or wanted to go to pujas. My main interest was really just a lunchtime meditation class. But to my surprise, when I read this particular translation of the root verses of the six bardos, I felt I recognised them, and they felt very familiar to me. Now, maybe I had heard them before, and I'd forgotten that I'd heard them. But whatever the meaning of that, it had a strong significance for me. So I'm going to read some of the more significant aspects for you. The first verse, there are six bardos. And I'm not going to read them all, just the first one, and then one of the concluding verses. Oh, now, when the birthplace bardo upon me is dawning, abandoning idleness, there being no idleness in the devotee's life, entering into the reality undistractedly, listening, reflecting, and meditating, carrying onto the path knowledge of the true nature of appearances and of mind, may the Trikaya be realized. Once that human form has been attained, may there be no time or opportunity in which to idle it away. Following that, we have verses on the dream bardo, the dhyana bardo, the bardo of the moment of death, bardo of reality, and finally the bardo of taking rebirth. One of the concluding verses, and this was the verse that really struck me. O procrastinating one, who thinks not of the coming of death, devoting yourself to the useless doings of this life, improvident to you in dissipating your great opportunity. Mistaken indeed will your purpose be now if you return empty-handed from this life. Since the holy Dharma is known to be your true need, will you not devote yourself to the holy Dharma even now? So this had a big impact on me. Not necessarily with respect to my relationship with my mother or my relationship to what was happening to my mother, but more in terms of how I regarded myself, my life, and what I was doing with my life. So the Tibetan Book of the Dead is, well, it's a term, it's a Western term, slightly misleading possibly, for something that's known in the Tibetan as the Bardo Todol. And that's probably more, well, I gather, is more accurately translated as liberation through hearing in the intermediate state between death and rebirth. And it's part of a bigger set of teachings, part of a cycle of what are called termas, which are texts which are said to, according to tradition, said to have been hidden away by a prominent teacher and then discovered at a later date. And the cycle of termas is called the profound teaching of self-liberation in the primordial state of the peaceful and wrathful deities. It's quite a mouthful. And there's another text in the same cycle, which is self-liberation through seeing with naked awareness, which some of you may have come across. And this latter book or text provides, in a way, a theoretical explanation for this whole set of teachings that what we know as the Tibetan Book of the Dead, that set of teachings that falls into, and introduces a theoretical or an idea of the meaning of awareness or intrinsic awareness, or sometimes called vidya in Sanskrit or rigpa in Tibetan, and also is something of a foundation for the practice of Dzogchen, which I'm not going to talk about. And traditionally, this terma cycle is attributed to Padmasambhava. He was said to have hidden it away in his lifetime, and was said to have been discovered in Tibet by Karma Lingpa in the 14th century. So it's just a bit of background. So the Tibetan Book of the Dead, it takes us through a journey, and it takes us through symbolically, it takes us through a journey between what happens at death and then what happens during the process of rebirth. And the intention is that it guides the individual. It's said to be traditionally read to somebody who's died by somebody who has the right qualifications to do that, and is a set of reminders for the person to be aware of what's happening, to withdraw projections and be aware. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. So in the root verses, there's an exhortation: abandoning idleness, there being no idleness in a devotee's life. So what does this mean? What does this mean? Does it mean that we should be busy? Does it mean that we should be running around doing lots of things? You know, when I'm running around, it means that I'm not being idle because I'm doing all these different things. At the same time, further on, it berates us. So it berates the individual for devoting yourself to the useless doings of this life. So there might be interpreters being an apparent contradiction there. On the one hand, it's encouraging us not to be idle. On the other hand, it's berating us for devoting ourselves to the useless doings of this life. So what does that mean? What does that mean? Well, immediately after the exhortation to abandon idleness, it says, entering into the reality undistractedly, listening, reflecting, and meditating. So that's what we need to do. That's to abandon idleness means to listen, reflect, and meditate, to enter into the reality undistractedly. Carrying on to the path knowledge of the true nature of appearances and of mind. Now, what does that mean? I'm not sure that I know what that means, but I'm going to explore some of that. So I talked about this other text, self-liberation through seeing with naked awareness. And it's a very interesting book to read. The main theme of it is awareness. And there's a short section from that book that I'm going to read to you. Some call it the nature of the mind, or mind itself. Some Tirthikas call it by the name of Atman, or the self. The Shravakas call it the doctrine of Anatman, or the absence of a self. The Chittamatrans call it by the name Chitta, or the mind. Some call it by the name Tathagatagarbha, or Buddha nature. Some call it by the name Mahamudra, or the great symbol. Some call it by the name the unique sphere. Some call it by the name Dharmadhatu, or the dimension of reality. Some call it by the name Alaya, the basis of everything. And some simply call it by the name ordinary awareness. So I'm suggesting that ordinary awareness in a practice of the Dharma is synonymous with, or at least very strongly associated with, entering into the reality undistractedly, listening, reflecting, meditating, carrying onto the path knowledge of the true nature of appearances and of mind. But the term ordinary awareness, it brings it right back to where we are now, right here, right now. So the Bardo, in the Bardo Todol, in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, specifically in the Bardo that's referred to by the Tibetan Book of the Dead, is the Bardo, or the space between death and re-becoming. More broadly, could be described as an intervening state, so something between two things, two processes. So, the Bardo Todol traditionally is read to somebody who's died, perhaps at their bedside, and at each juncture, at each stage, at each significant point, the deceased is encouraged to meet different challenges. And essentially, what they're encouraged to do in each stage is to embrace the clear, what's experienced by the individual, or whatever one wants to call that process, the person that's died, a clear, bright light on the one hand, on the other hand, a dull, smoky light. And it's said that the clear, bright light is or can be terrifying, and that one can feel tremendous fear at that clear, bright light. On the other hand, the smoky light is said to be attractive, comforting, and familiar. And it's said that what we need is preparation. The individual needs preparation and needs spiritual, a foundation of spiritual practice and the cultivation of awareness, knowledge of the true nature of appearances of the mind. Without this, as I say, the clear bright light can be terrifying, it's said, tradition says. And we can back off from it, or we may just perhaps phase out, go become unaware, whereas the dull light, as I say, is said to be attractive, familiar, comforting, we're drawn towards it. And I'm suggesting that the clear, bright light leads to creativity, compassion, wisdom, energy, spiritual growth, whereas the dull light may lead to inertia, stagnation, regression, and reactivity. But I'm also suggesting that the Bardo Todol, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, isn't just for dead people. It's also for us. It's for people who are alive. And obviously, each of us in the room will be a dead person at some point. So there will be a relevance in that sense. But right here, right now, hopefully, we're all alive. And the Tibetan Book of the Dead has relevance for us right here, right now. For anyone who, at least, who is aspiring to spiritual growth, to development of compassion, wisdom, creativity, energy. So bardos don't only exist between life or death and life. They also exist in life. And there are opportunities for growth, opportunities for development. We experience those bardos through awareness. Awareness opens up spaciousness in our life. It opens up opportunities in our actual experience. It opens up the possibility of choice in this intermediate state or intermediate states that we can potentially experience every moment of our lives. So we have the possibility of spiritual growth at every lucid moment. So the challenge is to be aware. The challenge is to be lucid. And I'm talking here about ordinary awareness. I like very much this term, ordinary awareness. It's not an idea. So if we're, for example, to use perhaps a sort of, perhaps a controlled example, say, imagine we're doing a body scan, bringing awareness to sensations in the feet. It's not the idea of what we think we might be finding in the feet. It's not the idea of the feet. It's the actual experience right here, right now. And maybe there is no, maybe we have no sensations in the feet. And although this is perhaps an overly simple example, ordinary awareness is just that. It's not an idea that we're putting on top of our experience, is what we're experiencing right here, right now. So I sort of get a bit carried away. So my feeling, my reflection, is that the Bardo Todol, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, there's a lot of symbolism in there that does bear a great deal of reflection. There's a lot of potential wisdom that one could unpack from that symbolism. But I think there's also a lot of scope for confusion as well, and also perhaps even for distraction, getting confused and distracted by the exoticism of some of the imagery. But if we can go underneath that, or understand perhaps some of the deeper significance of some of that symbolism, then I think the Tibetan Book of the Dead bears, or can bear, a lot of reflection, fruitful reflection. So if we can go beyond that literalism, then we can perhaps start to apply some of those teachings in our everyday lives. So our everyday lives, well, as we all know, and we all will know, our everyday lives can be challenging. We all experience impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, insubstantiality in different ways. We will all die. We will all, at some point, be ill. Possibly, although not necessarily, we will all experience old age. We will all be separated from loved ones. We will all of us will be, possibly even right now, having to come into relationship with unwanted or unpleasant experiences, painful experiences. My mother survived cancer. She's still alive, but she's now obviously older. In fact, she's rather frail, lives on her own in Nottingham. And life is difficult for her. She's, in a way, it feels slightly trivial talking about me in relation to her, but I do find it painful to watch her losing her faculties and losing her ability to be able to do things that she's perhaps invested a lot of her identity in. And life is getting old, I can see, is a very, very difficult process for her. I wonder whether actually as a society we take on board that for older people the process of getting older is a huge process. It's a massive process. We talk about the difficulties, the transitions of being a teenager, for example, a lot. But what about for older people? It's massive as they approach death. So those are major challenges that she's facing. I find it very painful to see her going through that process and well, at some point I will lose her, assuming I live longer than her, which is, I can't take for granted. It may, other allies may be challenging in terms of boredom, maybe missed communication, demands of life. Sometimes, perhaps in more reflective moments, an image that comes back to me is the image of, from Dante's Purgatorio, you've got Virgil walking through flames. And it seems that for many of us, possibly all of us, that's what we are required to do. To meet life means to also meet challenges, and at times meet painful challenges. And that, in a way, is our transition of walking through those flames. But I'm suggesting that as we do that, as we meet life in that way, we also have the opportunity to, if you like, burn off some of our habitual karma, some of our habits, or so I should say karma viparka, that we might experience. We don't necessarily have to react or respond in the same way. If we can be open to the experience and keep walking through what can be uncomfortable experiences, then perhaps we can emerge in a different way. And it's in this, or this is one of the ways that spiritual growth can occur. So spiritual growth, an image for spiritual growth is, one of them is the lotus. And you could see the lotus emerging out of flames, emerging out of fire. So we have this image, a lotus in an ocean of fire. So I'm suggesting, I'm sure there's many ways that one can interpret that image. I'm suggesting that one way could be that, in a sense, our lives are an ocean of fire. If we can meet that, then we have an opportunity for spiritual growth. So how do we meet that? How do we meet that? And, well, ordinary awareness. I'm going to talk a little bit about the phrase that I chose as the title for the talk. Taking exactly whatever appears as the path. I've changed it slightly since I gave some education the title. Accepting and taking exactly whatever appears as the path. And I'm going to rectify my terms. I'm going to talk about each of those, or most of those words in that title, to try to unpack some of the significance that, at least for me, that phrase holds. So there's accepting, there's openness, letting life in, being open to life, a willingness to be open to new experience. In the religion of art, Banti talks about egolessness as a willingness to be open to new experience. A willingness to face fears. A willingness to let go of fixed ideas, perhaps fixed ideas of self or fixed ideas of others, fixed ideas of what our experience should be. An openness to the clear bright light as opposed to the habitual and the dull. And this requires trust, requires enough trust, enough shraddha, that we won't somehow lose ourselves, we won't be completely obliterated or annihilated if we are open to our experience. So we've got accepting and taking. Taking, to me, implies that there's an active, volitional choice going on. We're not just passive in that process. We're making a choice. We're going for refuge, and to use the terminology that we use sometimes or often, in Sri Ratna. And this involves ethics, it involves renunciation, it involves doing something. Sometimes there's a phrase that gets translated, I understand, from the Tibetan sometimes as ascending with one's conduct. So we're doing something, we're not just kind of being open to our experience, there's an active process going on. So we've got accepting and taking exactly whatever appears as the path. So it's exactly whatever appears. There's a clarity of awareness, the mirror-like wisdom. And we're progressively seeing through projections, progressively seeing through our ideas of what we think reality or our life is about. Whatever appears, whatever, there's a sensitivity, refining our awareness of our experience. Perhaps what was subtle, or just on the edge of our awareness, perhaps as our awareness grows and develops, perhaps that becomes less subtle. Not gross or coarse, but less subtle in the sense of less slippery or less perceived just in the special circumstances. It becomes clearer, more obvious. And we've got this term appears, whatever appears. So again, we're receptive, we're open. In a way, life is presenting itself to us. We are alive. It's not that we have to go looking for it in any special circumstances. Here it is, right now, appearing to us. So even though it's open, it's presenting itself to us, in a sense, we need to wait. We need to be open. There's a patience there. Not prejudging or assuming, not grasping. Sometimes in Tai Chi we talk about we're seeing but not looking. So looking implies that we're trying to grasp with the visual sense. Seeing implies that there's an openness there. And we're taking the path. So to take the path, there needs to be an intuitive understanding of what's appropriate, of what the Dharma is. In a sense, we're descending with the view. We need to clarify our intellectual understanding. We need to develop right view through our study, through our reflection, through our communication, through our honesty. We need to cultivate Shraddha and trust. To have an intuitive understanding requires faith, it requires Shraddha. And it means going beyond what we know, going beyond what's habitual. So the intuitive understanding becomes an immediate knowing of what's best. What's best for the universe. Not just for you or for somebody else, but what's best for the situation. So the practice of accepting and taking exactly whatever appears as the path, that practice can be applied to every moment of our lives, every lucid moment of our lives. And it's the basis for the lotus to emerge from the ocean of flames, to emerge from our lives. So life has the potential to be sacred. Life has the potential to be sacred right here and right now. It's supported, that experience of the sacred is supported by our lifestyle. It's supported by meditation, it's supported by communication, ethics, renunciation, a simple lifestyle, puja. I've written puja twice down here for something. I've got puja. Friendships and connection, study, aesthetics, uselessness, non-utilitarian, retreats, lots of things. The things that we do, or most of us do. I don't. Not very much these days. But so the experience of the sacred is supported by these things. But it is not those things. The sacred is right here and right now. And those things actually can become ends in themselves. They can be, we can miss the sacred because we're looking at, it all happens in the shrine room. It all happens on the meditation cushions. It all happens when I'm sitting like this. It all happens when I'm in my community. But actually it's happening right now. And so we must be very careful not to miss the point. In fact, our spiritual lives can be tragically busy with doing supportive things and not practicing ordinary awareness right here, right now. That's what counts. So we need to be careful not to engage in the useless doings of this life, even though they might be spiritualized. In quotes. And becoming ways of avoiding our lives and deepening habits. So the essential practice I'm suggesting is ordinary awareness in the present moment, opening up the intermediate state right here, right now, opening up the bardo, where we have opportunity for spiritual growth. We're meeting life. And that life might be at the desk, it might be answering emails, it might be standing or sitting at a computer, it might be making a cup of tea, meeting someone, driving a van or a car, it might be walking, picking, using the phone, moving a box, reflecting on a work issue, going to the loo, eating lunch, playing table tennis, listening or giving a talk. It could be anything, but whatever it is, it's right here and right now. And all these things have potential to be sacred. So the present moment can be sacred. The current moment can be sacred time. The current location, however imperfect it is, however messy it is, however messy your desk is, however messy your picking trolley, however messy the car is or your van, that can be a sacred place if you're present to that moment. So we have the Pure Land. We have to start to have the Pure Land teachings opening up in the midst of our life. In a sense, where else could that be? There's nowhere else it can be. So we have a great opportunity. And we have, in a sense, the great opportunity at every moment to accept and take exactly whatever appears as the path. It hinges on ordinary awareness, being aware, right here, right now, being honest. So may we not dissipate this great opportunity. Thank you.